At least as important as Europe's material exports to Greenland were its psychological exports of Christian identity and European identity. Those two identities may explain why the Greenlanders acted in ways that ultimately cost them their lives, but that for many centuries enabled them to maintain a functioning society under the most difficult conditions faced by any medieval Europeans. Greenland converted to Christianity around 1000, at the same time as the conversions of Iceland and the other Viking Atlantic colonies, and of Norway itself. For more than a century, the Greenland churches remained small structures, built of turf, mainly on the largest farms. But Greenland had no resident bishop, whose presence was required for performing confirmations and for a church to be considered consecrated. Hence, around 1118, Einar Saccason was sent to Norway in order to persuade its king to provide Greenland with a bishop. As inducements, Einar took along to give the king a large supply of ivory, walrus hides, and, best of all, a live polar bear. That did the trick. The king persuaded Bishop Arnold to become Greenland's first resident bishop, to be followed by about 9 others over the succeeding centuries. Without exception, all were born and educated in Europe and came to Greenland only upon their appointment as bishop. Not surprisingly, they looked to Europe for their models, preferred beef over seal meat, and directed resources of Greenland society to the Norðsetta hunt that enabled them to buy wine and vestments for themselves and stained glass windows for their churches. A big construction program of churches followed Arnold's appointment, and continued to around 1300, when the lovely church at Kvalsi was erected as one of the last. Greenland's ecclesiastical establishment came to consist of one cathedral, about 13 large parish churches, many smaller churches, and even a monastery and a nunnery. While most of the churches were built with stone lower walls and turf upper walls, Kvalsi Church and at least 3 others had walls entirely of stone. These big churches were all out of proportion to the size of the tiny society that erected and supported them. For instance, St. Nicholas's Cathedral at Gardar was as large as either of the 2 cathedrals of Iceland, whose population was 10 times that of Greenland. Gardar Cathedral and the other Greenland churches must have consumed horrifyingly large amounts of scarce timber to support their walls and roofs. Imported church paraphernalia were also expensive to Greenlanders because they were ultimately bought with the sweat and blood of Norðsetta hunters and competed for the limited cargo space on arriving ships. Recurrent expenses that their churches cost the Greenlanders were an annual tithe paid to Rome and additional crusade tithes levied on all Christians. That the church was able to extract such tithes and complete such building programs testifies to the authority it commanded in Greenland. Besides that specific identity as Christians, Greenlanders maintain their European identity in many other ways. Over the centuries of their colony's existence, the Greenlanders followed European customs in detail. The excellent preservation of garments wrapped around the corpses buried in the permafrost at Herjolfsnes churchyard from the final decades of the colony's existence show us that the Greenland clothes followed smart European fashions. Those clothes included, for women, a long, low-necked gown with a narrow waist. For men, a sporty coat called a hooplanda, which was a long, loose outer garment held in by a belt at the waist and with loose sleeves up which the wind could whistle, jackets buttoned up the front, and tall cylindrical caps. These adoptions of European styles carry the unconscious message, "We are Europeans, we are Christians. God forbid that anyone could confuse us with the Inuit." The insistence on "we are Europeans" becomes serious when it leads to stubbornly maintaining cows in Greenland's climate, diverting manpower from the summer hay harvest to the Norðsetta hunt, refusing to adopt useful features of Inuit technology, and starving to death as a result. To us in our secular modern society, the predicament in which the Greenlanders found themselves is difficult to fathom. To them, however, concerned with their social survival as much as with their biological survival, it was out of the question to invest less in churches, to imitate or intermarry with the Inuit, and thereby to face an eternity in hell just in order to survive another winter on Earth. The Norse initially prospered in Greenland due to a fortunate set of circumstances surrounding their arrival. They had the good luck to discover a virgin landscape that was suitable for use as pasture, They arrived at a time of relatively mild climate, when hay production was sufficient in most years, when the sea lanes to Europe were free of ice, when there was European demand for walrus ivory, and when there were no Native Americans anywhere near the Norse settlements or hunting grounds. All of those initial advantages gradually turned against the Norse. While climate change, Europe's changing demand for ivory, and the arrival of the Inuit were beyond their control, how the Norse dealt with those changes was up to them. Their impact on the landscape was a factor entirely of their own making. We shall see how the shifts in those advantages, and the Norse reactions to them, combined to bring an end to the Norse Greenland colony.